This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider Solutions, located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered in Lafayette with 325 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit iberiabank.com for more information. And lastly, thank you for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Jimmy DiMaggio is our guest today. A graduate of LSU Law School, Jimmy has practiced law in Lafayette for 33 years and is currently with the DiMaggio Wright Roy Edwards Law Firm. That firm was established in 1957 by his uncle, Jimmy DiMaggio. Well respected by his colleagues, Jimmy has an AV rating in the Martindale Hubbell Peer Review, which is the highest rating in legal ability and ethical standards. Jimmy has served on the board of directors of CODAFIL, which is the Council for the Development of French in Louisiana, and currently serves as treasurer of the Francophone section of the Louisiana State Bar Association. Outside of his work, Jimmy has enjoyed a lifetime of fishing and hunting in the Atchafalaya Basin and marshes of South Louisiana. He's here today to share the story about what inspired him to photograph the lush scenery that he had taken for granted for so many years. You can view Jimmy's stunning photography at jimmydimaggio.com, or even better, visit the Louisiana State Archives Building in Baton Rouge, where his exhibit will be on display until December 27, 2019. Jimmy DiMaggio, my friend, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jan. I'm so honored that you would have me, and I appreciate our friendship over the years.
Yeah, me too. You know, I didn't even realize you were a photographer. So I'd like to, if we can go back in time and let you tell your story and what led you to, you know, your current avocation, I guess, hobby of taking photography.
Well, my dad was Jerome DiMaggio, Judge DiMaggio, and he had a boat with two other fellows, Snook Castile and Floyd Potin. Some funny guys. And we had this boat in the basin. So at a young age, probably 5 years old, I started going with my dad and my brother and some of my sisters from time to time in the Henderson Swamp, and just found this great, great attachment to it, as so many people do. My story is not unique in that regard. So many people from around here fish in the Atchafalaya Swamp, but I don't know, there was something so special there. And then as time went on, it was just such a wonderful experience. You know, as you mature a little bit, I got to appreciate the lifestyle, the culture, the specific French language that the folks from the basin have. So it's just a great time.
Your dad was a well-respected Court of Appeal judge in the Third Circuit, along with my father-in-law.
That's correct. My dad was Judge Swift. Jerome DiMaggio. He was chief judge of the Third Circuit Court of Appeal. He served very honorably, and he did serve with the great Judge Swift, who was your father-in-law,
and,
for many years.
My husband, John, told me to get in that Bill Swift, just really respected your father. And those were the glory days, I think, of the Third Circuit. That was just such a great group
of
thinkers.
I know Bill. I had a case or two with Bill over the years. And, of course, I know John and you so well. And it's good to know you.
Yeah, so your family, the DiMaggios, have really played an important role in protecting and preserving the Acadian culture. And so I do want to get in also that your uncle, who's also named Jimmy DiMaggio, not only served in the U.S. House of Representatives, but he was also the force behind the founding of CODAFIL back in 1968, if you can touch on that.
That is correct. You know, this morning I saw an article in the paper about the Cajun interpreters in World War II, in the role that they played in communicating with the leaders, the generals, and the people, and the intelligence that they played. The story's so well known, but you know, it was the French language and the French culture, the Acadian culture, Creole culture, was pretty much stamped out, as many other cultures were in the country. You know, Germans, Lebanese, whomever. Anyway, so the cause to try to bring back the pride and respect to the Cajun people was led by my Uncle Jimmy DiMaggio, I'm very proud of. And he was just such a tough fella, and he had a goal, and he was not going to say no, and he fought his way with other people, of course, to make Cotafil a very successful program.
You know, I'd heard about that. My girls went to school out at the academy, Jimmy, and some of the teachers would talk about that. You know, the French teachers would talk about how when they were growing up, people couldn't speak French. They weren't allowed to speak French in schools, and they were punished cruelly if they spoke any French. And they would make the kids, like, kneel on pecan shells, broken up pecan shells, as a punishment because they couldn't say the words correctly in English. It was horrible to think about, but that was the way it was.
That was a dark time in our history. And again, it happened not only in Louisiana, but it happened throughout the country, this quest to have uniformity and Americanization. You know, maybe some of those goals were okay, but they did it at a great price to everybody's culture, everybody's language. Mm-hmm. And you know, how much better we'd have been off if the people would have continued to perpetuate their language and pass it on. I mean, it's so much more efficient for our country to be bilingual than just, right, you know, speaking some one single English language.
Right. So when you were coming up, you were talking about fishing with your dad. Did you understand, as you were younger, what your uncle was doing? And I'm sure your dad was involved in efforts too. But
my dad was involved, but not on the level that Jimmy was. My dad at that point would have been a judge, so he was working hard in a judiciary role. But Jimmy had the time, and he had the money, and he had the chutzpah, the political chutzpah, to start this movement, and he did it with tactics that were necessary to get through the legislature. He had a coalition, ironically, with the Anglo governor, John McKithen, who really was the one who allowed this to occur. So the irony of it is you had an English-speaking only governor that—
Protestant,
yeah. Yeah, of course. But he saw the vision. He had a vision, and he understood the message that Jimmy was trying to give him, along with other legislators such as Edgar Mouton and others, many others. So it was a great— mélange, as they say in the French, a coming together that actually became very successful.
Right. And I know you were a graduate of LSU Law School, and I kind of surprised you before the podcast saying I'd read your law review article that was published in 1986, and you spoke about the Acadians. If you can touch on that, because I think this leads into your photography. I am trying to lay the groundwork.
Well, I was fortunate. Professor Paul Byer at LSU Law School had worked with me. I took an individual studies class with him, and I wanted to write this article. It was entitled Native-Born Acadians and the Equality Ideal. And basically, it goes and it discusses various constitutional provisions in our state and United States Constitution and different employment regulations that pertain to ethnicity in the workplace, but also gave me an opportunity to really learn about the constitutional provisions that discriminated against French-speaking people in our state, and how over the years that had to be cut back and eventually protected in our present constitution. So I wrote a lot about that, but the impetus behind it was a decision that I believe John worked for Judge Hunter from Lake Charles, and the name of the case was Roach versus Dresser Atlas. And it had to do with whether or not this Acadian who was discriminated against in the workplace, who lost his job, he was an engineer, and he was called very many derogatory terms depicting the Cajuns. And he fought back, and the issue was whether or not Acadians had a national origin for purposes of the statute. And that the fact that Judge Hunter was so eloquent the way he wrote that, you know, you didn't have to come from a country, it was a place of origin.
Right.
And of course, Acadians came from the province, a province in Canada, and they wasn't a country, but it was a very distinct, unique group of people that came down here. Yeah.
Right. It was a fascinating case. And one of my favorite lines that you wrote in that Law Review article was, since the migration of the Acadians to America from present-day Nova Scotia over 200 years ago, this group has adhered to a diligent work ethic, code of honor, and celebration of life. And I think that sentence, to me, encapsulates what is so special about the Acadian culture. And that's what I see in your photography, especially the celebration of life. They lived off the land, but they appreciated the land. They wanted to preserve the fishing, the hunting. They wanted to preserve the beauty of South Louisiana. And I don't know, when I read your Law Review article, I thought this ties in. I don't know if you even knew about that, but it seems like you're now celebrating what's so special about South Louisiana.
Well, that was a long time ago. That was 1986. Mm-hmm. A lot's happened since then. And in my maturation with the basin and the marshes, you know, I've kind of come to another part in my life, and that's sitting back and not only, you know, working with the people. I've represented many crawfishermen, for instance.
Right.
But to just try to take a step back and try to preserve what the primarily the Chaffalaya Basin offers. There's a song, a Cajun song that was written, I think it's called Travailler Trop Peu d'Heure. It's about working hard, you know, the Acadians' work ethic. C'est trop d'heure, excuse me. Travailler, c'est trop d'heure. And it's just, you know, an expression of the tough life that the Acadians had. Mm-hmm. But you can't stop their progress. They've always managed to come out ahead. Some of the hardest workers, Cajuns and Creole people, mm-hmm. that are just tremendous in their work ethic, their family values. They adhered and they preserved the French language, which is somewhat different in St. Martin Parish than it might be in New Orleans or mm-hmm. Lake Charles, let's say.
Isn't that interesting, though? So you've had your practice, and you have represented some people that do live off the land. How has that maybe shaped your mindset? I know you represent, you're a personal injury lawyer,
yes.
and we're not here to really talk about
yeah.
cases, and here we are. But it seems like that probably has defined how you look at people and how you want to help them.
You know, without getting into specific cases, and specifically as some of the crawfishermen from the swamp or the Chaffalaya Basin, you know, you see the humility but strength that these people mm-hmm. have and their commitment to preserving that way of life. And in the joie de vivre, the yeah. oft-used expression, really applies to them. Mm-hmm. And I just was always impressed. And through that relationship, that professional relationship, I learned so much about the water issues in the swamp. You know, over the years, you've had different developments in the swamp, mm-hmm. the basin. You've had, you know, oil field canals or pipelines. That might be good for progress. But unfortunately, a lot of the siltation was dumped on the banks. So you had a lot of these spoil banks mm-hmm. that occurred and blocked the natural flow of those natural wow. bayous. And hence, you know, it kind of choked off the vitality or the mm-hmm. vibrance of the swamp in many ways. But the swamp's much like the Acadian people, like the Cajun people, it survives and it continues. Mm-hmm. I do worry about that, though, with the perpetuation of or the continuation of a lot of siltation. A lot of areas I used to fish 30 years ago, I can't get to now.
You know, physically, so, just impossible.
Yeah, because of the deposit mm-hmm. of silt and siltation or what have you. And that's just a natural process, I guess. But it you know, I hope people will become more cognizant of what we have in our backyard.
Mm-hmm. We had Jim Gosson on. His show aired a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if you've met him.
I know Jim well. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know his main message is what you're talking about preserving. You know, he's talking about Gulf Coast, but all of
he's done a
American
wonderful job.
Seafood. Yeah.
Absolutely, I'm a big fan of Jim's. He's trying to perpetuate the oyster harvest in our state and on our coast, and it's a lofty goal because it's a great, just like this basin is attacked by a lot of these spoil banks that choke the canals. Mm-hmm. The same is true in the Gulf and the oyster beds, right. you know, and all the different issues that surround that.
And it, you know, we've grown up here. It's hard to imagine like 50 years from now what things might be like. And so can we talk about your photography? Again, people can go to jimmydimaggio.com and see your work and purchase it if they want, but it's stunning.
Wow, thank you.
Talk about, I mean, I know you've got certain times a day you like to capture.
Well, I guess a little background's in order. Again, I was talking about as a kid, you know, going with my mm-hmm. dad and my brother and sisters from time to time, and then going with friends through college and high school and college, and then, you know, as I got older, you know, became more of a bass fisherman. So I would do these tournaments, mm-hmm. or I'd just go out a lot bass fishing on weekends. And, you know, I was always looking at the sunrise or the sunset and the trees, but, you know, it was always kind of a passing thought. And then, again, as I've gotten older, I said, you know, I got to really step back. I got to look at this. And, you know, the photography was a natural continuum of that, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess I'm all right with the composition. I kind of know a lot of places. And I'm proud of my work, yeah. It gives me a lot of peace. I told somebody the other day, I said, you know, every time I see a sunset, I think it reminds me that God really does love us so much, despite how couillon and canaille we really are. That's
for
sure.
He keeps on bringing the sun back, and nighttime
exactly.
for rest. So do you have a favorite spot, or is it just...
Well, not really. You know, when you talk about the basin, you know, getting on I-10 and crossing at Henderson, that's just such a small aspect of the swamp. Matter of fact, Henderson itself is just a very small area of the Chaffalaya Basin. What I consider fishing areas and places to go, I start up around Port Barry, around 2 o'clock Bayou, and Big Alabama, and some of those lakes and areas up there. And then you go to Henderson, then you continue on down to Bayou Benoit, and it goes all the way to Stevensville, which is past, you know, by Morgan City. It's a huge area. Matter of fact, the Atchafalaya Swamp is the largest river swamp in the world. And it's an amazing place, not unlike some of the great resources we have, such as the Everglades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you take photography lessons, or was it something you just picked up?
No, I didn't take lessons, and I'm not even cognizant of all of the new lenses and so forth. I have a Canon EOS with a basic lens process. I also take whatever's in my boat. You know, I'll use an i7 Plus camera from time to time. And
your phone, you just use
Sometimes.
I read that.
But mostly, you know, it's the Canon EOS. It's a nice camera, but it's not the fanciest in the world.
So you started taking photos, and then did you realize you had a collection? Like, how is this
evolved?
Well,
you know, Facebook kind of brings it full circle. You know, I reluctantly got on Facebook. I told somebody over here that I still have an 8-track in my truck. That's not true, but I'm not a techie or a tech.
But I mean, we're legal pad people, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I never really had all the training in that aspect of it and the technical stuff. But, you know, I'm learning.
So you started posting photos on Facebook?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Facebook, I'm sorry. Facebook was an avenue to post some of these things, some of these pictures. I said, look, I want people to see this. I see it not every day, of course, but on weekends when I go or after work. And I just see this wonderful opportunity, this vista that you just don't get. You know, you might get there every day, or, you know, there might be similar areas, but it's always different. Even similar areas can be different from time to time.
And so you have Herman Meir, who's very talented. If you can talk about that, he's assisting you.
Well, I'm blessed to know Herman. Actually, Barry Onsley called me one Saturday night and said, you know, Herman Meir would like to talk to you. He's, you know, with Herman's background, he was the curator of the art museum at UL for many years, taught fine arts at university. And is just a tremendous person. And Barry got us together, and one thing led to another, and then he decided that we could do something with this, you know, to sell some of these or to present them in a proper venue exhibit situation. Right. So Herman's been, you know, really such a great guy.
Yeah. So you just had the opening of the exhibit at the State Archives building. It's on Essen Lane in Baton Rouge, if people aren't familiar with it. A majestic building, very easy to get to, and your work is now on exhibit through December 27th.
Thank you. And what a nice venue. What a great exhibit place. The lighting's perfect, and of course Herman did such a great job. I want to digress a minute, though. Philippe Goustin, who everybody knows, was president of the Festival International group and active in the city government for so long. He came down here, and he was my Uncle Jimmy's right-hand man for many years. He came from Belgium, and he's been such an integral part of the French language movement, Renaissance, if you will, for so many years, in his own right, I should say. But anyway, Philippe and Herman got together with some of the folks, Florent Hardy at Louisiana State Archives. And that's how that deal came together, through their efforts. You know, I didn't know too much about art venues or photography venues. So
Herman
thanks
was
to them.
Your ambassador, Herman and
Herman
Philippe.
And Philippe. Uh-huh. Philippe and Herman did a lot in Florent Hardy primarily. So anyway, it's a great place, and it's been a nice exhibit. We had a reception last Thursday. About 100 people came. I think they liked it, you know?
Yeah. Is there a book in the works?
Yeah, there will be. I just need to get going on that. I will do a book, and I want to write about the different geographical areas of the Atchafalaya Basin. I don't want to forget about the marshes, by the way. A lot of my photographs are of the marshes in Vermilion Parish, Pecan Island, around Erath, Henry area also. The marsh is also another great natural resource for our people here.
Jimmy, do you keep a journal when you take photos? Do you journal on the spot, or do you just remember the photo?
I don't do a whole lot of... writing of them. I'll just maybe if I post them, I might post them within a few days,
and
I'll just put where I took the picture. I'll make up a name for it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That would be
stunning.
I kind
of remember
book.
Where I went, though.
Yeah, that would just be so stunning.
I think I'll write a book about the language that the Cajun people want to preserve and have preserved for the most part. It's another thing, even younger people in the outlying area of the Chaffalo Basin still continue to speak French, you know, and it does flourish. And that's an interesting part. You know, the people there's so many personalities that come from around the St. Martin Parish area. You know, Pat Yuval.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a little blog piece on my Facebook page about Doucet's Grocery in Butte La Rose. Just a tremendous people. The love, the affection that I have for those people is just phenomenal. And it's good that they continue their heritage.
Right, right. This is interesting. It goes back to me, I'm going back to that 1986 Law Review article, because you really did document a lot of the history and why it's important that people are able to respect their heritage and their culture. That would be a great book if you could pull all that
Thank
together.
Thank you, I will.
Yeah.
You just gave me great encouragement to continue on.
I
want to
see it. I want to see that in the bookstores.
I'll get you an autographed copy.
Yeah.
Better print it first, right?
You kind of remind me of Farley Saunier. I don't know if you remember
Farley.
He has been gone since the 80s, but while he was a fine lawyer, the real love of his life was hunting and fishing.
Absolutely. And I grew up on Myrtle Place in Lafayette, and they did, you know, the family did also. I went to school with his sister, Anne. And Farley was just a remarkable lawyer, you know. Like I said, I still practice law very heavily. Some people said, did you retire? I said, absolutely not. I mean, there are weekends,
the
you know, and you do have daylight savings time, and you can leave on at 5:30 from work and, you know, catch a sunset, you know.
Yeah. A lawyer never really puts down their work, though. It's
absolutely
always in our head.
Well, cell phones don't help either. Maybe with taking a picture from time to time, but I seem to always be getting a phone call right around that time.
Yeah. Well, we're here in this, we're in Raider Solutions, obviously, in the Raider, can I say Raider or Raider Solutions?
We go by Raider these days,
all
but
right.
we still are Raider Solutions, but we brand it,
yeah,
air quotes, as Raider.
They're going to have to put this on my brain, but Jason Sikora is taping us today, and I know you've been taking some notes over there, if you'd like to ask
questions. I do have some notes. So first of all, thank you for being here.
Oh,
I know that you know our Director of Business Development, Kurt Richard, and you know Chris Raider.
Sure.
So it's fun to have you at the office today and kind of show you what we do. So you answered a couple of my questions already. Do you know what model Canon you have? Is it a 5D?
It's EOS.
Okay. Is it like, I'm guessing it's a 5D or a 1D?
I don't know.
You don't even know? Okay.
Do you know whatever I have in the boat, man.
Do you know what lens you use?
It's standard lens. I don't really
know. The one that came in the box.
Okay. The one that came in the box.
Do you know what mode you shoot in?
Why are you doing this to me, bro?
Well, I'm a photographer as well.
You're a real photographer.
Well, I don't know. Like, your pictures are pretty amazing. So that's why I just wanted to, like,
I'm working on all the technical aspects of this new
sound. Like the Beatles. I don't think they could write music when they started, right?
Right.
That's true. You know? Yeah, yeah. No, I just wanted some inside tips.
Somebody called me the fifth Beatle, so I'll take that.
Okay, fair enough. Do you do post-editing, or do you just take the picture the way it was shot?
Well, we do. Yeah, you know, I have a process, Snapseed, from time to time. We'll do a little editing of the...
Okay.
Like, there might be an obnoxious branch there, you know, you can kind of take it out, so to speak. But I try not to enhance the photographs unnaturally.
Okay.
I want it to look just about like what I saw it, you know. So there's very little enhancements that's done. Maybe some ambiance or some brightness or saturation that might be done. Herman does a little bit of that with his photo shopping aspect, whatever he does.
Yeah, and I like Snapseed. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's good.
What was your drive to photograph nature?
Yeah, just being in the swamp, you know. When you get there, there's a smell that you just, it takes all the stress away, man. It really does. It's like you get out there and it's like you're not on Johnson Street anymore. You know, you don't have somebody cutting in front of you. You're in the swamp. You know, there might be a lot of boats there in Henderson, for instance. But if you go further down south around Bayou Benoit or, you know, like around Duck Lake, way down by Franklin area, you start to feel this transition from, you know, what we see on the streets every day.
Well,
and that's what I want to preserve. That's what kind of gave me the impetus to want to do something with photography in this beautiful swamp we have.
That's awesome. Just like this podcast, we're preserving something that's going to last as long as humans do on this earth. You're doing the same thing. You're preserving images of
Yes.
And putting it out there so it will be around as long as humans are around.
Well, thank you kindly.
Yeah. So 200 years from now, people can still enjoy your photographs.
Well, that'd be great.
All right. Why are there so many Jimmys in your family?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. My uncle was Jimmy. Jimmy DiMaggio. He didn't have a middle name. I have a middle name, though. It's Harvey.
Who was that?
My mother, who I'm so proud of, and she died a few years back. My mother was a registered nurse and an Army nurse. She, as soon as she finished her nursing training in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that's where she was from, she joined the Army, the nurse corps, and she ended up in France. And then the war ended about 3 or 4 months. She landed on Normandy Beach, but not on D-Day. Wow. I'm always tell people, my mother landed on Normandy Beach, but not on D-Day. And after VE Day, she was shipped to the Philippine Islands. And my dad was an infantry soldier. I'm very proud of his war record. He had a Bronze Star in a lot of combat. I've heard a lot of the stories. And the war was toward the end, and about they met. And 6 weeks later, they got married in Novaliches, Philippines.
Wow.
By the priest over there. And she came from the big city girl from Philadelphia, all the way down to Lafayette. Well, first they went back to New Orleans because my dad, he was actually at Georgetown Law School, but after the war finished at Tulane. And then shortly thereafter to Lafayette. So she came from the big streets of Philadelphia to the dusty streets and roads of Lafayette, Louisiana, mm-hmm. in about 1945 or so, 46.
Boy, and the town was so different then.
It was a different town. And at that time, my uncle was in Congress, and he was a political force in this town. Most people know a little bit about that. And, you know, so that's where the Harvey came from. Her last name was Harvey, I'm sorry. Her name was Julia Harvey DiMaggio.
And then your son goes by James.
He does.
Yeah.
He goes by James. Most people know me as Jimmy. In high school, they used to call me Harry. So I got a group of people that call me Harry.
Really?
They call me Harry. Yeah.
Because?
I was athlete. I think athletics or something like that. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
So Jimmy gets the nickname Harry.
Whatever, man.
Fair enough.
That's how it goes.
All right. So my last question, we'll circle back around to photography. Have you ever considered photography other than nature photography, like maybe portraits or?
No. The only, you know, every now and then I'll take a candid photo of something or somebody. For instance, this summer, Patty and my wife, Patty, and I were at Pesh, the restaurant in New Orleans, in the garden, in the Chapultepec, wherever it is. Mm-hmm. And it was, I captured this picture, which I really am proud of. I like it a lot. It was two of the oyster shuckers. And I did it in a black and white sequence or whatever you call it. And it really is good, I got to admit. And everything just hit right on that. And so I doubt it, though. That would just be spontaneously. I don't think I'd gravitate to that level. I will say this, though, on the wilderness aspect, I mean the outdoor photography aspect of what I do, I think the next venture after I continue on, I always will take pictures of the swamp and the marshes, but I think what moves me a lot is the Cajun prairie land in Jeff Davis Parish, Vermilion, and primarily in Acadia, around Roberts Cove in that area. My wife was at a retreat the other day, and I went to pick her up, and driving through Roberts Cove right around dusk, I looked out and I said, that's the capture right there, man. That's going to be a good avenue. So I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to start taking pictures of the Cajun prairie land. A lot of history there. Also brings in another neat aspect of the Cajun and Creole peoples of our community. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot about the swamp in the marsh and people that the inhabitants of that area. But then you get to like the Cajun prairies. You got to, you know, a different work ethic of Cajuns and Creole people there. You have different ethnic groups, different religious people groups over there. You know, you got a lot of Germans. And I like all that mélange, I'll use that word again, of what makes our area great. All races, all ethnic groups, and we seem to flourish well.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing those.
Right on.
I appreciate it. Well, thanks for being here. This has been awesome.
Well, thank you. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, Jimmy, what a great story. I'm so glad you're on the show, and I do want to thank you for supporting my efforts. Whenever I see you out, you've always been so kind about this. I'm like you. I think I want to document.
Yes.
I'm trying to document the voices and let people share their stories. And as Jason said, this will be here where people can listen to it and be inspired and maybe pick up a camera or a paintbrush or some other hobby that turns out to be a talent.
Well, Jan, I want to say this. I've always been proud of what you've done for our area, especially with Upper Lafayette.
Thank you.
And all the other groups that you've been associated with, and you've been a great leader of our
thank
area,
you.
And that's a big thing, and I'm very proud of that.
Well, thank you. So please give your wife, Patty, my best.
Yes.
And hi there, Patty. And I want to thank you for making time today to come on Discover Lafayette. I want to thank Raider and Jason Sikora for taping our show. Also, a big thank you to Iberia Bank, Lafayette General, for serving as presenting sponsors, and Camellia Beans. We're very happy that they've come on board. So thank you to our listeners. You can go to discoverlafayette.net to listen to this podcast and all of them, or you can go to
Alexa. Play Discover Lafayette podcast. There you go. You're welcome.
Or iTunes or anywhere you get your podcast. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.